yesterday I didn't know I was hitting a nerve when I asked Spike if his daughter had another car accident. Because
what?
It wasn't a car accident.
No.
There's other stuff going on. But you were playing with your two-year-old, too, and your two-year-old is... Is the two-year-old really fun? Do you wish you could freeze her at that age, also having a teenager?
Darby's actually 2.5 yesterday, was a little 30-monther for us. And she is just... It is an absolute joy. That kid laughs at everything. We kicked a soccer ball yesterday for like hours.
How much does she talk at 2.5?
Oh, she's stringing 4- and 5-word sentences together. Little, you know, and she's got her own little dialect.
What sort of sentence would a 2.5-year-old say?
Oh.
Give me something, right, generally?
Oh.
She isn't at the age where she asks you about stuff. Once they learn to really do sentences, then they go, what's this? Why?
Oh, I haven't got a why out of her yet, yeah.
Yeah, that's coming.
She threw a little tantrum the other day. She was, you know, she's getting out of napping. We're transitioning from a daily nap to staying up.
Big girl all day.
Yeah, staying up till, you know, 8:30 before you go down for the night. And at about 5:30 the other day, she said, Darby, one bottle now! And just, boom.
I've been that way.
Oh, man.
bottle now?
Yeah, Darby, one bottle
She knows
now.
The difference between now and waiting then.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Oh. She's got timeline.
It's the first thing you have to teach them.
She's very coordinated. She's an athlete. I mean... You know, Ryan, God love her, she's not my biological daughter, so she didn't get the athletic genes.
Still, the apple doesn't fall far from the stepfather.
Shut up. Ryan's not the natural-born athlete. Darby can throw at 2.5. She's got a pretty good arm on her. She can kick. She kicks a soccer ball. She can got good hand-eye, good foot-eye coordination.
Are you looking at her for sports? You going to get her on a lacrosse team or something?
Oh, yeah. I've already got visions of her playing Duke lacrosse. You know, I really do.
The Duke women's team gets to still play, don't they?
Yeah. Duke women's team's the number one team in the nation, and that's a great school, albeit aside of their current circuit.
So you think Darby will get into a great school?
You know, I hope she will, on her athletic abilities. I think drama might have been a bad idea on the older one. I think that might have been a wrong hobby, passion to foster.
You have to encourage what they love. Don't you have to encourage whatever your kids love? Does anybody agree with that?
Emily goes to acting every Saturday morning. She loves it a lot.
And your daughter has provided nothing but drama in your life, your older daughter, Ryan.
Yeah, that's the truth.
So you got to see if there's a potential paycheck in it.
Yeah. You know, she's got this idea in her head that she's going to be fine and that everything's going to be okay. Because... I mean, you know, we
wait a minute, and you're like my dad. You have this idea in your head that she's a complete screw-up and that she's going to be a complete waste. Is that right? I'm just guessing.
Well, no, I don't know if it's that extreme.
Typical parent-teenager confrontation.
Well, I tell you, her grades have suffered. We have been so proud about what a great advance she'd made.
What sort of grades does she have?
Well, she went in one semester from the honor roll to being...
Well, then they didn't suffer. She ended it quickly.
It was pretty much a...
If they had dragged it out over several quarters, they would have suffered.
Yeah, John Wilkes
but
Booth...
her grades
delivered
went
her
boom, right from A to F. That's perfect.
John Wilkes Booth delivered her report card to the back of the head, apparently. She went in one semester because of her involvement in the extracurricular spring musical.
It wouldn't be more because of her non-involvement in school.
Well, she decided that homework wasn't important. Yeah. And she decided not to turn in assignments, and God love her. You know,
but there are people in drama who also get straight A's. I remember I was really hot for one in high school. This girl was the lead actress in drama. She got all A pluses.
Yeah.
So it wasn't drama's fault.
No. No, it was her. It's her fault.
Girl would never talk to me, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I didn't realize that every time I hung out with her, I was looking ridiculous.
Why?
And that people were laughing at me behind my back.
Why?
I was a dork.
And she was the cream of the crop, the best the school had
Cream of the crop, the best the school had to offer. And I didn't know better that she was out of my class. Jeannie, I remember her name. She was the valedictorian when we graduated. She was the captain of the cheerleading squad. She would have the lead role.
She had
the
brains and the looks. Huh?
Brains and looks.
She's the best and brightest. And here you are, the missing bulb on the front porch there. The
And I would sit next to her. And I was shy. Kind of like that guy on Grey's Anatomy who what's her name? Like, the lead actress. Ellen Pompano. She, feels sorry for him one night, so she's going to have a what you call a pity sit-down. And halfway into it, she says, "Oh, I can't do this with you. This is ridiculous." That's how I. That guy, that doctor, the one who's so uncool. That's what was me.
That was you, huh?
Yeah. So it's not drama's fault anyway. But back to your daughter. She's her grades took a huge nosedive in just one semester.
Major nosedive.
At 17 years old.
Yeah, and by all accounts, in her sophomore year is the year that schools look at. Your senior
they actually look at the entire high school transcripts, the whole 4 years of high school, and they look at the average of all four. They look at your total grade point average, and then if you pull yourself out of a nosedive, they look at that too.
The problem is that you start shopping for places now, after your junior year, you start shopping and competing with other students for the few available slots in the preferred schools. And real quickly, I'm trying to teach her that, unless you're looking at the Truck and Tractor Academy of Southwestern
Maybe
Louisiana,
she's good for Truck and Tractor.
I don't think that's the case.
She's got that kind of tough attitude.
Thick knuckles.
Thick knuckles. And
her whole life.
Black hair and, she's kind of built. Yeah, she can handle it.
It's not so much the school. It's not so much the grades. It's not so much any particular thing. It's we've become complete adversaries at everything, no matter what it is. She's just pushing my buttons. She is.
She's telling you that she doesn't want to go to school. Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And everything will work out for her. And you're just trying to push all of these stodgy study, develop good work habits, all that stuff down her. And she doesn't need any of it.
Unrealistic expectations is what I'm being here told again and again and again. I have unrealistic expectations.
Maybe
for
you
her.
Do. Maybe, and maybe someone will want to comment on this. Maybe if a kid really says, look, I'm not into studying, I'm not into school, you shouldn't push them.
Well, that's when and she says that, and I say, well, are you into food? Are you into eating? You into staying warm at night? You into being dry feet? How about dry feet? You into dry feet? You like shoes that have holes in them? You into those? You into comfort?
Well, all you need for that is a husband. Come on.
She's 17.
I know where I'm. I know the peninsula I just waded out onto as the iceberg broke off and left me alone. But there's nothing wrong with being a great homemaker, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know.
If that's all that's open to her.
Well, I don't want anything to be all that's open to her. That's my point. I don't want anything to be her only avenue, her only course in the future. I don't want her to
limit. But it is her life. She gets to choose.
Isn't it a natural phase, much like Darby at 2 saying, me want bottle now. She's learning she can demand food. A 17-year-old's job is to rebel. It's... You're feeling freedom. You're feeling, me want freedom now. Now, they don't think it through what freedom means, but I think...
You should lose your job, sit around the house, get lazy, and be on unemployment, and then she wouldn't want that. we'll give you
saying.
A sabbatical.
Okay.
Eric Corman, go ahead.
Actually, I've got some goddaughters that are in the same age group, and I see that it's basically a trend among their peers. This is not just an isolated incident with Ryan. What I'm seeing is that as we have fewer children in this country, we tend to prop them up more than our parents did to us. Everything they do is fabulous. They should be all movie stars, and they actually grow up
They should all go to Duke. Except for the boys now.
Yeah.
And they should all, Ivy League scholarships, they should all become serious professionals with super women with careers and husbands and families and a maid and a nanny.
I'm not asking
Botox
for all that.
Botox injections on Wednesday night.
Botox every other Thursday. I'm not asking for all that. She's talking about these unrealistic expectations I have for her. So, look, all I expect of you is to be a decent person and do your best. If that's an unrealistic
expectation...
She
can do that with Fs.
No, she can't. No.
Yes, yeah, some people, their best is an F.
But that's not her. Her best
some
is not...
Some her, not her, but I mean some...
I don't buy that at all.
She's like, well, I'll never need this. I'll never need math. I'll never need blah, 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 blah. I said, look, I'm not asking you to remember the Battle of Cornwallis or whatever. It's the date of the Gettysburg
Do you
address.
Remember the Battle of Cornwallis?
Hell no. Oh. But what I want you to get out of school is the fact that they can give you a task, you can be accountable, and do it. Because someday when you have a job, they'll expect you to come in, do your job, to get a paycheck. If you become the kind of person that doesn't follow through, that can't be trusted to do anything, you're not going to be fine. She's got this, I'm going to be fine. I'm a decent person. It's all going to be okay.
And it might be. It might take years. I mean, think about yourself, Spike. You went, I don't know how your grades were, but I know.
Pretty bad.
Me, they weren't great. I went from one slacker job to the next. I took most of my 20s figuring out what I was going to do. I was a good person the whole time.
I got fired from like 5 radio stations in a row. So even though I had this great idea of this profession, I was a loser. I was fired at one radio station for stealing toilet paper.
Because we all know radio stations have the best.
Well, I just I thought if it was in the supply closet, it was as good as mine, and I could just take it. Oh. So, what ends up happening is once they're really on their own, then they say to themselves, at some point, oh, if I don't put something in the pantry, nothing will be in the pantry. And if I let something into my pantries, if you know what I mean, then I have to deal with the consequences. Because when you remove you, that's when I think the equation changes and they actually... Because they remember everything you're telling them now.
Do they?
They just rebel at it at the moment. 1-800-252-1025. Couple of questions. The advice you have for Spike, generally. If your kid doesn't want to go to college these days, should you... push as hard as you can to convince them that college is necessary in today's environment, 2006. In other words, is it different from when we were a kid?
Right.
Do they have to go to college? You have to go to college unless you want to be a loser. I'm sure some people are saying it to their kids, if not in those exact words, by the way they're behaving.
Well, you know, I
you've sort of intimated to her that if she doesn't go to college, she won't
what,
be able to eat.
No, that's not what Spike's saying at all. Spike's basically telling her it's better to work your butt off the next couple of years so that you have the option and that you at least graduate from high school. I mean, at least graduate.
I'm telling her to keep your options open. So, you know, I'll ask you, I want you to sit the SATs, and I want you to get yourself eligible for college. If in a year from now you have a change of heart, you have an awakening,
trust
an epiphany.
Me, he thinks she has to go to college. It's in your brain that she has to go to college, right?
Somebody in my family ought to finish college.
See?
Somebody.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
Oh, of course.
Thanks.
It's nothing new under the sun. Spike's 17-year-old daughter, Ryan, is revolting. A little bit about school. She's saying, hey, I don't need school. The fact that I went from honor roll to F's in one quarter is not a big deal. I'm into drama, and everything will turn out. Quit worrying, Dad. And that's the PG version of it, right?
Yeah. Man, you have cleaned that up like a surgeon. I'm trying to get into her head that, you know what, you don't just get to all right. You got to take steps in the right direction to get to all right. I say, like, you're at a fork in the road. You can either become an absolute failure and a person nobody wants to be associated with, or you can, you know, do the right thing every chance you get, or at least most of the time, and take steps in the right direction to
and
be
so
all right.
And so it's you, the lecturing dad, and her, the rebellious teenager. We actually have someone with quite some experience on the phone. Jim is a Portland High School vice principal. So let's go right to the high school vice principal from Portland, Jim.
Like, I haven't spent enough time this month with high school vice principal.
You have. Oh, and Jim, Spike is in your office all the time. You know that.
Absolutely.
And he's one of those parents. He's one of those, what do you call them, propeller parents or helicopter parents?
Helicopter parents.
Is that what I am? Am I hovering?
No, you're not. Actually, you're not one of the helicopter parents. The helicopter parents are the ones that, even though the kid's getting a 3.7, they want to be there to make sure they're getting the 3.9, and they're driving their kid to med school or law school or Stanford or Cal. Or
oh,
MIT.
Okay.
That ain't a concern for us.
That's not a helicopter parent. So what is he like?
My only advice, I deal with these kids all the time, and I also have a stepdaughter who's 15 who we go through the same thing with. And it's parents in this situation, in my opinion, need to let the child choose to do what they need to do. And if they fail, they choose that fail. Support her, love her, tell her you disagree with her choices, but let her fail on her own. Take responsibilities. The sooner young adolescents learn to deal with their choices and their responsibilities and outcomes from those, the better off they're going to be when they're 21, 25, 28 years old.
So I should let her blow the chance of going to a good school up right now, blow it up.
Absolutely. Let her decide. Let her empower her with her own choices. Let her do it. Love her. Support her. You could disagree with her. Don't fight with her. But it's her life. Let her choose to live it.
Now, if he was sitting in your office and his daughter was one of your students, is that what you'd say, Jim?
Absolutely. I would say it to her, too.
Wow.
Jim, she wants to sell crack in the hallway of your school. Is that going to be okay?
Yeah, well, you don't want to go there.
She's a little entrepreneur is what she is.
Yeah. I mean, what if some of what she's doing is a little unhealthy, too? We haven't gotten into the whole alcohol and tobacco.
No. Unhealthy choices aren't there. I'm just talking about if she chooses not to turn assignments in, she chooses to, you know, not study for the test. You know, she gets a 1.5 or she gets a 2.5 and she doesn't do well on the SAT, you know, those kinds of things. You know,
right.
Drugs and alcohol and other choices like that. Of course, we need to intercede with our children
that
way.
Of course, you're not. I mean, that's not what we're
education?
Talking about at all.
We're not talking about that at all, but if we were, what should he do?
Shut up. Jim, my question is, isn't it a parent's job to not let a 17-year-old, you know, I don't want to leave her future up to a 17-year-old. This is the most important time in her academic life, right?
It is, but the choices, from my parenting position, we do all that stuff when they're 7, 8, 9, and 10 years old, and we hope that we empower them with those choices. If they choose something different, all you're going to get is grief, and they're going to go the other way. Throw it in her lap, let her be in charge of it, and see how she likes handling all that responsibility with nobody else intervening.
Portland High School Vice Principal, you want to shout out to the school? What's the name of the school, Jim?
I do not want to do that.
Okay.
I can't be answering to the name Jim there, Fred.
Absolutely. You guys have a great day.
You
Let
too.
Me
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, your name is Seymour Students. Thank you.
Here's someone named Ryan on the phone. Ryan in Everett. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Bob, Spike, and Joe. What's going on?
Not much, dude.
Hey, I've got a 12-and-a-half-year-old, and she does real well in school. She's a cute little kid. But I've pretty much told her that, you know, if your future is not college, you better stay thin and cute.
Better stay thin and cute.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's what...
I like that.
If you flip burgers for a living, what's better, flipping burgers or working in a mocha stand or marrying someone with a lot of money?
We're back to the dad that uses flipping burgers, by the way. My dad used flipping burgers. That one's still good, generation later.
Yeah.
Stay...
Who's going to make a living on that?
A 35-year-old Mexican in my neighborhood. That's who's making a living flipping burgers.
All right, so stay thin and cute. Thank you, Ryan.
What is going on here? I'm just...
Which part do you disagree with?
Well, and it's so unfair because I don't have kids and I'm only 26, so really what do I know? But if you're a parent, you shouldn't be made to feel guilty for pushing your kids. You shouldn't be made to feel guilty for not befriending them. And, you know, that's for after they're 18. When I was in high school, my parents made me do a lot of stuff that at the time I thought they were full of crap. And I'm glad now, 10 years later, that they made me do it.
I think you give your kids information and you discipline, but you don't push. I mean, just yesterday, I had to write a check for Emily's college fund. She goes, "What you doing, Daddy?" I said, "I'm writing a check so when you get older, you can go to college." And she says, "Well, what if I decide I don't want to go to college and I just want to go to work?" I said, "No problem. I'll keep the money." She says, "Well, can I not go to college and keep the money?" I said, "No, that'll be your choice.
It's only if you want to go to college."
Yeah, you don't have to push them to go to college.
Tell her how much money you have saved for college and tell her how much fun you're going to have with it because she ain't getting in. Robbie, hello.
Yeah. Hi.
You're on.
I wanted to share with Spike that I, too, have a 17-year-old daughter, and actually, I think they have the same birth dates. Anyway, the other night, we were watching Oprah, and the guy who did Super Size Me also did a documentary on what it's like to live on minimum wage. No health insurance. He ended up in the emergency room with an injury from work. He was living on $7 an hour, and he said it was really, really tough, and it was a real eye-opener for her that college is very important unless I want to end up like that.
Do you remember what the movie was called?
It was, but it was by the guy who did Super Size Me when he ate McDonald's for a month.
Right. Mike Jones?
It was part of, I think it was part of his series where he, experienced a certain thing for 30 days and he tried to live on minimum wage for 30 days. It was on TV. And it was based on inspired by a book called Nickel and Dimed in America by Barbara Ehrenreich, where she tried to live on minimum wage and found it pretty much impossible.
Thank you, Robbie. I disagree with that. That whole notion that you have to go to college.
You know what? I'm not saying she has to go to college. I'm asking her to leave that leave that door open, leave that opportunity available if she should choose to do
but
that.
But the vice principal from, I am not going to say the name of my high school.
You know what, that guy had a daughter that's looking at the same college spot my kid is. That's what that was. That was sabotage. That was him trying to undermine my kid's chances to beat out his kid for a spot in school.
By the way, if your kid wants to go to college, she can go to college. It's not going to be a university. It will be a community college or an art school.
Which, by the way, is
probably what she wants anyway. And do you know how you get into those schools?
How?
Breathe. Have a pulse.
Have a dad with a check.
And have a dad with a checkbook.
Welcome to the Spike O'Neill Memorial Library.
No, seriously. It's not that hard. Vicky, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to tell Spike that he's right on. I have a 14-year-old boy, and you've got to push them. Otherwise, they just sit back and think D's are fine.
I'll trade you my 17-year-old and a red paperclip for your 15-year-old boy.
No, it's you have to push them. Otherwise, you know, you'd look at, okay, they want to be a ditch digger. Well, yeah, the world needs ditch diggers, but...
My dad said ditch digger and burger flipper.
The old standard.
And it still works.
It's like Sinatra and Barry Como, man.
Right. Did I end up a ditch digger or a burger flipper? No. Did I go to college? For a very short time, and I hardly touched the classes.
But you worked hard for something you were passionate about. And
exactly.
That's what's important. And if you can push her to work hard now so that 10 years from now she can go to college if she changes her mind... That's all you got to do.
Well, you're pushing her away from working hard, and what she's passionate about is drama. So let her do the drama and get D's.
What she's passionate about is not working hard. So where's that? How do I solve that?
I think she worked very hard on the drama.
She worked incredibly hard on the
drama.
Carrie,
go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Bob, Spike, and Joe.
Hi.
I have some advice for Spike. I agree with the assistant principal. I have a 20-year-old son who decided he'd bail on school, and we just finally said, you know, we kept taking responsibility for him by nagging him and getting on his case all the time, and we said, you know, your grades are your results, and we support you. And in that process, he really, he ended up graduating with not the best GPA, but now he's working part-time and going to community college, so... I just want to give you hope and encourage you to let her make her own decisions, but within the boundaries of your household.
All right. Very nice. Good people. You're all very nice. I'm sure your email box will be full later today as well. You know Sean, our friend the attorney, and I hope he won't mind me telling a little bit of his story. I'm not going to tell you much of it. But you know he's a great lawyer.
Yeah.
He became a lawyer not by going to college at 18. When he was much older.
Really?
I think maybe 30. Wow. Did he tell you? He told us the story, right, Eric?
Yep, that's right. And it was 30 when he started.
He spent, I think, his 20s exploring other options.
Really?
Was it involved in law, like researching?
I'm not going to...
Well, you can't know the good side of law until you've learned about the bad side of the law.
Let's put it this way. When he decided, hey, he had a cause, he wanted to do environmental law, he paid for his own schooling. He went to, I believe, community college, paid for his own schooling, got his degree, and became the kind of guy who likes to help people, which is, again, a different kind of lawyer. So
he's an amazing man.
You can have a change in life. Some of us bloom late. Sophia.
If you'd like to make a...
Oh, we lost Sophia. She's 17 years old, and she wanted to talk to you. Sophia, call back.
She had to go to school. She didn't want to be late. She was a good student.
There's a kid.
Mike, hello. Are you there, Mike?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
All right. You have a 16-year-old.
I have a 16-year-old that has been diagnosed ADHD. And, you know, I've been struggling since elementary school with him and his schoolwork. He refuses to do anything. I've tried restrictions, rewards. He's a phenomenal skier. I've tried taking that away. I've tried giving him things. Money, it just doesn't matter. He doesn't have...
I think you have ADHD. Because you're completely inconsistent message as a parent.
Well, but I agree with that. And I probably did. And I struggled in school.
Me too.
But But the problem with it is that no matter what I've tried, and this is being a parent desperately trying to grasp out to your child and help them, you try everything in your power to help them and explain to them that, you know, you're going to be living in a box. If you can't even get a high school diploma, you're not even going to be able to flip burgers. And
I know.
And you're going to be digging a ditch, okay?
And so at 16 and still struggling and being in an alternative school and trying with this, I finally have to say, you know what, you're almost 17 years old. You're just going to have to experience this on your own. I mean, I've tried everything I can, and, you know, I'll be there for you. I'll help you as much as I can. But you know what, you can't freeload and live here. You can't, you know, you're going to have to find your own way in life. And at 17, you're a man, and you're going to have to just suck up and, you know, live in the hole that you dug for yourself. And, you know, hopefully you can build a ladder.
It's that kind of positive message from my dad made me love him so much.
So anyway, yes. I just, you know, I feel for you, and it's a tough road.
I feel for you too, Mike, because you're trying as hard as you can.
And what do you do, Mike, for a living?
You know what? I'm a general contractor, and like I said, I was terrible in school. If I could go back, I would go back in this instant. You know, I can remember sitting in school looking at math going, you know what? I'm never going to work in a bank. I don't need to know anything about math. And
then you had to build somebody a kitchen.
I do math every day. I struggle every day. And you know, I'm a successful contractor, and I'm extremely busy. And you know, everything's great now, but it was a struggle then. And, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Math didn't matter to you until it actually did matter. Thank you. Heather, go ahead.
Yes.
Heather, you're on.
Yes. I just wanted to say that, like, if she had really great grades before, mm-hmm. and her grades have dramatically shifted now, I'd want to know what's going on with her.
What was dramatically? It was the drama club.
Right now is, like, what's the big shift about?
Well, you know, she decided that turning in assignments wasn't a priority anymore.
Something shifted because she used to turn them in, right?
Yeah, well, she got involved with an extracurricular activity that ate up so much of her time that the sacrifice she had to make was the time that should have been allotted for homework.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, then maybe there are consequences, right? Like, not to take away her happiness, but if you're going to do this and stay in this, you need to understand that if you don't start turning in your homework, I will take you out of this program.
You know, it sounds real cute and all to say consequences, but we're not going to take away your happiness. But to me, that's the only consequence that matters, taking away your happiness somehow.
You know, I've taken away happiness. I've taken away misery. I've taken away everything I can possibly take away from this kid.
All right. Well, just a comment.
Okay, I give up. Thanks, Mike.
Hey. Her hopes, her dreams, her food, oxygen, liquids.
Okay, good luck, Spike. Can't help you. Daryl? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I never went to high school, and so then I went and got a college degree, and it had no bearing on what I do. Neither my wife nor myself have high school diplomas, and we both do very, very well. We have myriad business interests, and she has a job with municipal government. And I've always thought that high school was the great American lie. And I keep hearing it repeated on your show. Oh, you don't go to college, you don't go to high school, you'll end up living in a box. And you make your own reality in life, I think. And you may need a college degree to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or some of these specialized occupations that require specialized education. But in the day-to-day living, in high school, they don't even teach you how to balance your checkbook. And so you've got a bunch of people with high school diplomas that can't even get around and do the things they need to do. It's a sad disgrace, I think. And yet the children are taught, oh, you've got to have it, you've got to have it, or you'll end up in a box. And you're going to end up in a box if you're doing drugs and you're screwing up and you're doing the things that you don't want to do, college diploma or not.
Love it. Daryl, great routine there. Great rap. I agree with it.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
What do you do again?
What does Daryl do? He makes a lot of money. That's all you need.
A myriad of business interests, I believe he said.
Mark, go ahead.
Yes. I keep on hearing, hey, ditch digger's a bad job, dick digger's a bad job. Looking at prevailing wage for a power equipment operator, backhoe, excavator, shovel 3 yards and under, so that's as small as they get. $41.12 an
ditch
hour.
Diggers make $41 an
holy
hour.
Holy cow! Bye, Bob. See you, Joe.
And all the chiropractic you can handle.
See, it's not so bad. And that's what I was saying earlier. The trades aren't bad. Business isn't bad. You don't need college for any of that stuff.
You guys are killing me.
What?
You guys are killing me.
All right, what?
Well, I buy the excuse that you don't necessarily need college. I'm really tired of the excuse of most people go to college and they don't even do what they do that they major in while they're there. Well, of course not. But I wouldn't have gotten the job that I have if it weren't for college, because I wouldn't have qualified for the internship that got me in the door.
Do you want to tell her, or do I have to?
Oh, let me do it.
We never looked at your colleges other than, oh, that's cute. That's
if you'd
nice.
Have had a 4.0 Dean's List, summa cum laude, or whatever they call that, if you'd have been a foot and a half shorter and 300 pounds, you wouldn't have got the internship.
I
got news for you fellas, because
I don't even know him, okay?
Yeah. I got this job.
I'm not like that at all.
No. Yeah, okay. I'm yes. not of the industry in general.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, of course, she's referring to getting into the door with our sister station. We never would have
Thank
met
you.
Her. But they, I've seen it.
They let you in because you had a college degree?
No, because in order to have an internship, you have to be getting credit in college courses.
That's true even with our show these days.
Well, yeah.
That leggy blonde at Platt, is she going to school somewhere? Okay, let's get her on the streets and maybe with a station T-shirt. Get her a small.
And I've seen this firsthand. Regardless of where you're, you know, go to school, what you study, if you apply for a job, you send in your resume, there are two piles. There's the pile of people who have a college degree, doesn't matter what it's in, and there's the pile for people who don't.
Yep.
In radio? Come on.
Radio?
There's the pile of people who are interesting and can get ratings, and then there's the pile of people who you tried to have a sentence with them even on the phone when they called, and it was a little difficult, and that's that pile.
But we are 0.01% of the employment world in this country.
Yeah.
In construction, there's a pile of people who've worked for you and know what they're doing, and they move up, and there's the people who messed up and cost you money, and they don't move up. I mean, to a certain extent, how well you do is based on how well you do at whatever you try. Adriana, go ahead.
Okay, I was just calling because I wanted to say there are a lot of other options after high school, and I was thinking maybe it'd be a good idea if Spike tried to talk to his daughter about those things. There's a lot of other things you can do and not necessarily need a college education to be successful at.
And he needs to think about those things, because right now he thinks table dancing is the only other option. But he's going from
no.
his own experience at that age.
There's other jobs, like a flight attendant. That's something that's really interesting, and she could travel the world and get to know lots of different people and experience all kinds of.
And what about a housewife? We talk about it like it is doesn't like it's evil and it doesn't even exist anymore. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. There's other, like, right out of high school, I myself didn't want to go to college, and my mom helped me start my own business, and I had a daycare for 5 years.
If I found that she were attracted to breadwinners, successful guys, I wouldn't mind the prospect of her becoming a housewife.
She's not attracted to successful guys yet.
No, not yet. At this point in her life, she's
attracted to them. That's because she already has one that's her dad that covers every check that needs to be written.
Exactly. Maybe after she's been out there for 5-6 years working hard and seeing that it's not...
Oh, yeah. She'll want to trade up just like the guy with the paperclip. Trust me.
Absolutely. Then you see that, okay, maybe I need a guy with a little bit of money, somebody who can help me out, somebody with some security.
Thank you very much. We do have a ditch digger on the phone. Let's jump right
to... He wants that $40 an hour job the guy was offering.
Jason, you're a ditch digger.
Well, I'm in concrete, but I do dig ditches on a regular basis.
That's good enough
and,
for me.
I'm on your side on this. I heard you say earlier that college isn't absolutely necessary.
Thank you.
I think it completely is dependent on the individual. I am self-employed. I have been for 3 or 4 years. I'm only 29 years old. My wife's a homemaker. I work hard. She doesn't have to. That's what she was born to do, is be a homemaker. Did I do well in school? No. Would it matter of how much my parents pushed me? Not at all. They pushed me as hard as you could have. It doesn't matter.
You know, some people are descended from the great thinkers, Socrates and Plato, and some people are descended from the guys that hauled the stone to the pyramids. Let's face it.
Without them, we wouldn't have the pyramids.
Exactly, right. And that's how. And thank you. I was going there. And the other thing is, you know, you're a ditch digger. When you're digging a trench, your body is alive, your mind is alive, and you're experiencing life to the fullest. I'm not a ditch digger, but I frequently paint myself into a corner, and that feels good sometimes. Ron Howard may be a big-time movie producer, but his little brother, Clint Howard, is much cooler. After all, how many episodes of Star Trek has Ron Howard been in, huh? Clint has not only done 3 different Trek series, including the original, he's also appeared in at least 200 other TV shows and major motion pictures. As a kid, You saw him with his big brother on the Andy Griffith Show. He played a little toddler. And with a big bear on Gentle Ben. More recently, he's been on the big screen in Cinderella Man, Ed TV, and the Austin Powers series. Currently, Clint Howard has a starring role in a nice family comedy called Church Ball, which also stars Fred Willard and Gary Coleman. Clint Howard, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
Well, that was a heck of an introduction.
You know, I have a feeling you are fun.
Well, with the music in the background, I wasn't sure whether I was listening to my introduction or my old bit.
Oh, sorry about that. Well, that was the...
No, I liked it.
That was the religious nature of this production. I understand there's a sort of a religious undertone to the...
Oh, yes. Church League basketball.
Right. And I obviously haven't seen it yet because I can't stay up late enough to go to those sneak previews, but... It sounds like fun. I love the fact that it's family-friendly because I think we need more family-friendly movies.
Well, yeah, me too. And listen, while we were making this movie, I knew this from my experience. I've been doing this a long time. It's harder to be clean and funny than dirty and funny. It takes sort of, extra care to maintain that whole family-friendly thing and get laughs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge. I sure enjoyed these guys, Hailstorm Entertainment, Kurt Hale, the director, Dave Hunter, the producer. They're a young bunch of filmmakers. They are family people themselves. They are up there in Utah. They're Mormons. They previously have made LDS themed movies. They are attempting to branch out, and I fully support these folks in their attempt to make movies that we are not embarrassed to take our children to or our grandparents
to.
Right
on.
All right, but I do want to ask, because you're not a Mormon, right?
No.
I do want to ask, we're pretty sure there's no subliminal messages in this movie that are going to make me move to Utah.
That's a different wife than the last scene. Wait, that's another one.
There's no, someone will be at your house Saturday morning and
you'll... like the movie? Can we have a cup of coffee?
There's invisible ink tattooed to my bald head.
Okay.
That says, the devil is here, the devil is here.
You have such a rich history of experiences in showbiz, yet you're the lesser-known brother, obviously, by far. Does being Ron Howard's brother, in the sum of all things, I know I can tell already you're a wholesome guy, and it's going to be a wonderful answer, but in the sum of everything, does it help you in show business? Does it sometimes hurt you, or does it have no difference? You're a fun character guy, and you would be doing this anyway.
Well... I occasionally get the vibe that it may hinder me a little bit from time to time. And I say that, my brother is not only a very popular person and a very active producer and director. See, he has to say no to a lot of people. He's got a production company, and that production company has hundreds and hundreds of people coming up to them wanting to be involved in a project. And they have to respectfully, politely say no.
There are not enough hours in the day for him to take every wacky movie script.
Rod, it's Apollo 13 and a half.
And then, of course, these people are then going to turn around, and if they see that I'm coming down the road trying to get a part as an actor,
mm-hmm.
they're going to go, yeah, right, we're going to hire him. His brother didn't even look at us. But the fact is, Ron is above and beyond being a very talented director. He's a great older brother. He's a great sort of mentor, and I am so fortunate, I am so blessed that he was in front of me as my older brother, leading the way in life, not just in show business.
Right.
That I would trade it all to maintain the fact that he's my brother. He's a pretty cool shadow to be sort of hanging out under.
You began your show business career, probably involuntarily, as an infant, in Andy Griffith's show, right?
Well, you say involuntarily. I don't believe I was, screaming and kicking.
No, I know.
But yes, I didn't know. I don't remember my first acting job. And in fact, my first scene was with Don Knotts. And we recently lost Don. And in fact, coming up next week is going to be his memorial service here in Los Angeles down at the Writers Guild Theater. And brought back, memories for me, because I do have memories of working on the Andy Griffith Show, not the first episode, but I did work for a couple of seasons. I did five or six episodes.
So you remember teething?
No, no. It's interesting that, you know, I'm very much like one of these kids that was raised in the circus to walk on the high wire. It means nothing to me to do it. It's kind of, it's been ingrained in me. I've learned by osmosis on how to be a performer. And, you know, when you look at a little kid walking the high wire, you go, oh, my God, he's walking the high wire. Well, but if that's how he learned to walk, you understand that it's no different walking on a high wire than walking on the sidewalk, if that's what you know how to do.
What you get used to when you're young is completely normal to you.
Yeah. And also raised by a wonderful set of parents, that you know, Midwestern folks, and my dad was a farmer, and my mother was the daughter of a butcher, and maybe that's why I do all these horror films. No.
Butcher.
And they taught a very grounded sense of values.
You do, and now you've been in so many roles. Have you ever been in anything that disturbed you and you thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that?
Oh, no, because once I take the job and I give them my Social Security number and I realize I'm going to get a paycheck, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is what I do for a living.
Right, doesn't mean you agree with every line of the script. Okay.
I tell you what, I have, and I'm not going to name names, I have turned down, once I got married, and I had a wife, a beautiful wife, to answer to, and, you know, I started to have to kind of say, no, I'm not going to be in that one. That's a little too much. It's happened two or three times in the last 6 or 7 years where it's been just movies that, you know, maybe when I was in my early 20s I would have said yes, but now as I'm getting a little bit more long in the tooth, I just say, guys, I don't think so.
Now, you've had a lot of roles in Ron's movies, Cinderella Man, Ed TV, Apollo 13. Has he ever not given you a part? Has he said, you don't get the job?
Oh, sure. I lobby all the time.
You too.
I lobby, every picture. Now, I didn't lobby on Da Vinci Code. I mean, not to let the cat out of the bag. I'm not in Da Vinci Code. I knew there were very few Americans in the movie. But on all these roles, I mean, it's one advantage of being the brother of the director. I get to read the scripts. And in many cases, you know, there will be a discussion of I will have an idea about what kind of part I'd like to, you know, kind of compete for, because I still have to compete. Although I don't really audition, I do have to kind of, you know, I act as my own manager. And I say, hey, I think I could do that part really well. I kind of know what I think he'd book me into. So, you know, Ron and I are really close. Listen, it's, you know, show business is not my end-all life. It's just, it's a career. It's a way for me to make a living, and I enjoy it. I thoroughly enjoy being in the entertainment business, but it's, you know, I know exactly what it is. It's a job.
By the way, several of us on the show are Trekkies.
Yeah.
So you know what's coming
now.
Yeah.
Do you relish it as much as I?
Do you relish it, or you find it annoying when Trekkies come
no,
up to you?
No, you know, I don't know. Listen, that particular time in my life, I was doing a lot of episodic television, and I believe that particular night I was on a couple of different... I was on another show that same night. So to me, working on Star Trek was, you know, had no extra value to me. Only later in life did I realize, wow,
it's a cult classic.
It's a phenomenon.
Yeah. And you were...
I enjoy it. To be honest, I was never a big Trekkie, but I've learned to appreciate, you know, people that, God, they've got a passion. They've got a passion for this show, and God bless them. You know, and I get a lot of laughs out of it. And, you know, that Tranya that I drank was pink grapefruit juice. Now, I was like 6 years old at the time or 7 years old, and I just, it almost made me hurl.
That's nasty stuff to a six-year-old.
Yeah.
And my dad said, you know, just drink it.
It could have rewritten it.
If you really go back and look at the episode and you see me sip it, it's like I'm sipping, you know, like liquor or something. You can tell it's got kind of a tangy taste in my mouth.
They could have rewritten the alien stuff to be chocolate milk, and it would have gone much smoother.
Well, that's what I told them. I said, how about grape juice?
How's it changed for child actors these days? I'm sure you probably have some kids in church ball. How is it off the set and on the set different for a kid that's in Hollywood these days as it was for you and your brother when you were growing up in the 60s?
Oh, you know, it's the same. There's probably, there is more money rolling around on the table. Child actors now, I believe they understand their representatives, their managers, and their parents realize that there's more money to be made. So I don't know whether that. I've never asked a kid, hey, do you know how much money you're making? But I know that's different. Ron and I, even when we were working on our television shows, we weren't making astronomical amounts of money. I'll tell you what, it's really important that parents remain extra involved in their children's lives when they're around the adult environment of working on a television show, because it's the adult world, and it's not toxic, it's not evil, but it's adult, and it really needs to be handled with an extra set of directions.
Right. You don't want your kids.
It's important that the parents are there, and I'm seeing that. I'm seeing probably now more than ever parents staying involved, parenting their children on the set. It hasn't changed all that much.
If you leave them alone, they're off on a tour bus. You don't know what's happening.
Yeah, this past week has been a week for me. Not only did I have jury duty, I had a root canal.
Ooh. Which would you have preferred to get out of? If you had only one.
I actually got into the jury duty. I actually, in fact, yesterday was my first day when I wasn't on panel. I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed watching the judge and the prosecutor was a real wingnut, and so was the public defender. These guys were they weren't the sharpest tacks in the box.
Was it an important case?
It was criminal. I would not have wanted to have had this guy as my defender, nor would I have wanted to have the guy representing me as the prosecutor.
Actor Clint Howard in Los Angeles, the movie Church Ball.
Yeah, everybody should go see it.
Be nice chatting with you.
No, and a good chat with you guys.
Bye-bye. Kyle MacDonald had a red paper clip in his hand and a light bulb going off in his head. The light bulb idea was to go on the internet and barter that paper clip for something better, then trade that item for something else, and so on, a swap shop kind of a deal. Kyle figured with a little luck, a little publicity, and some skillful horse trading, he could conceivably parlay a paper clip into a new house. It's been 9 months now. He's doing reasonably well. Since Kyle made his first trade, the paper clip at that time was traded for a fish-shaped pen, which sounds just like the type of thing you could, get money for on eBay. Since then, he's traveled thousands of miles, made a number of trails, and is currently offering up a day with Alice Cooper. That's what the paperclip has been traded for. Anyone who wants a day with Alice Cooper and thinks they might have something better is invited to visit Kyle on the web, and Kyle is on our phone right now. Kyle, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Great. Yourself?
Okay, sir. You started with a paper clip.
That's right.
What kind of paper clip? Just a typical ordinary paper clip? One of them plastic ones, one of them colored ones? What kind was it?
It was one red paper clip.
Big?
Regular size.
And you thought you could get a house for that?
I actually do, yes.
You still think you're going to get a house?
I'm planning on it.
Okay. At one time, you were up to 1 month's rent at a duplex in Phoenix?
Yep, 3 days ago.
And you traded that for a day with Alice Cooper?
That's right.
Why?
Well, because the thing about a year of rent in Phoenix, Arizona...
Was it a year's rent?
Yes.
Wow.
Unless you live in Phoenix or are prepared to move there, it has zero value to you whatsoever. I know the same thing rings true with Alice Cooper, but Alice is going on tour, and... My whole object here is that I started with one red paperclip, but I'm trading it for bigger and better things, and then continuing a train of uptrades. The thing about afternoon with Alice Cooper is 98% of the population thinks I'm an idiot, but 2% is like, wow, that's the best thing ever.
Okay.
The 2% that really digs it is going to put something up, and I'll trade with them. And
all right.
This is really cool because it... There's no value to this. If you don't like Alice, it's worth nothing. If you do like Alice, it's worth everything.
He is a horse trader. All right, what are some of the things you had in the meantime? You had a fish...
I traded the one red paper clip for a fish pen.
Okay.
and I pen shaped like a fish, and I traded the pen shaped like a fish in Seattle with Annie Robbins for a doorknob with a smiley face on it.
Okay.
And I traded the doorknob for a Coleman camping stove, traded the camping stove for an electric generator, traded the electric generator for a sort of like a bunch of beer keg and stuff like that, mm-hmm. traded all that stuff for a snowmobile, traded the snowmobile for a trip to Yak, British Columbia.
Where's that again?
It's kind of...
It sounded like you just had an intestinal problem.
Yeah.
British Columbia.
Much. It's kind of just right above Sandpoint, Idaho, in the Rockies there.
Okay.
And traded that for a cube van, like a big box truck or a moving van. Traded the moving van for a recording contract at the studio. Traded the recording contract for the year of rent, and I just traded the year of rent for an afternoon with Alf.
So you've got some... Now you're up to some pretty lofty promotional materials still. How are you going to trade that for the deed to a house? It's, do you have any vision of where you're going next, or are you just looking opportunistically to make tiny incremental gains?
I think it's all about incremental gains on the trade value. I want to keep these trades real. I've been getting offers from these online casinos and these sort of guys who just want to get in for free publicity. I have no interest in doing that. I'm actually trying to create a series
of situations
where...
The online casinos have offered you a house just to...
They got me on speed dial. They're calling me, and they see the publicity this thing's getting, and yeah. I'm really not interested in just capitalizing on it like that. I'm actually want to make decent trades, legit trades, all the way from one red paperclip to a house.
Well, if you get a house, you know what becomes more valuable than your house is that red paperclip. GoldenPalace.com will pay big money for that.
That'll for the paperclip that was traded for a house. That's what they'll buy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
Do you know where that paperclip is? Do you stay in touch? Do you phone? Do you talk?
It's Ronnie and Karina. They live in Whistler, B.C. They've got it on a picture frame in their apartment.
Now, you live in Montreal, right?
I do.
And you're currently in Los Angeles.
I am.
How are you able to jet set all over the continent?
Part of the last trade that I made for the trade for the year of rent in Phoenix included a trip down to Phoenix. I actually made a quick little hop from Phoenix over here. I work for a company called Tableshocks.com. Have you ever sat at a wobbly table in a restaurant?
Yeah.
You work for a .com company?
Well, I just said it, so it's easier if you want to check it out. But
what is it?
Tableshocks.com.
Tableshocks.com, okay.
They're not .com at all. They stabilize restaurants. They make these little shock absorbers for restaurant tables so they don't wobble. And it sounds really ridiculous.
You're saving beer coasters for what they were intended to be.
Yeah,
purpose.
But no more ridiculous than trading a paperclip for a house. It's very fitting.
Exactly. And I kind of rep this company all over North America part-time. And in my spare time, when I'm at these trade shows in L.A. or New York or Vancouver, wherever, I made these little trades, and what's happened is I started this as a hobby, these trades, and it's turned into like my full-time gig. So Tableshocks is sort of on the back burner now, and I'm doing one red paperclip full-time.
Wait a minute, your company Tableshock is on the back burner?
Yeah, it's not hard
to have time
of income anymore.
Wow,
one red paperclip is your first time full-time
job.
Wait a minute,
how is this paperclip a source of income?
There's text ads at oneredpaperclip.com that help pay my rent, and I've actually, I started this to make trades, but I really started it to meet people and tell stories. The trades to the objects drive the story. Everyone wants to hear about the objects, but for me, it's all about trading with a person and then writing about the experience. I started it as maybe a potential for a book project, and I actually signed a book deal this week, so.
All right, now it's oneredpaperclip.com.
That's right.
Okay.
One, the letter, the number, the word, what? How do you...
Either or, you can...
Good thinking.
All right. Kyle, do you have you have a girlfriend, right?
I do.
Is she like this?
What's that?
Does she think you're a pretty amazing guy?
it's kind of funny, because I've been putting an obsessive amount of time into this project.
No, that's what I suspected.
That's the part she's not kind of happy with. However, I get a call last week from a TV studio in Japan that wanted me to go over to Japan to go on TV, and I actually called up my girlfriend and said, hey, do you want to go up for sushi? And she's like, she loves sushi. So she's like, yeah, let's go up for sushi. And I go, how about in Japan? So we're actually flying to Japan on Monday for the week to go do a TV show in Japan that wants to talk about this project. So that's pretty cool.
Kyle, what's it going to take to the next step? What do you see a date with Alice Cooper? What's an equivalent or what's an equal trade for you, fair trade?
I really don't know. I know where I want to go, which is a house, but I don't know how I'm going to get there. And that's kind of the fun. Like, the phone could ring in 5 minutes, and it could be someone offering up some sort of trade. I think the key is to, at some point, not get away from just sort of objects, like get into the experience kind of thing. Like, if you're an Alice Cooper fan, this is huge. It could turn into the kind of thing where, you know, maybe someone could offer up a night in the Lincoln bedroom or these sort of things. And
well,
I think
the president loves Alice Cooper.
Does he?
maybe. You never know.
I tell you how you get your house, Cal. It's real simple. You just accept a job at an advertising agency, a media company. You're one of the most creative thinkers out there to come up with something
like this. Joe, this is not rocket science.
Hey, man, this guy is an opportunist deluxe.
No
I'm
offense,
impressed.
Kyle, but you're having fun and all, and it was a great idea, yes.
Well,
is what he's doing rocket science? No, anybody could do it.
But he's got a paperclip so far into a book deal, which is, to me, better than a house. They're probably going to make a movie out of this because they'll make a movie out of anything.
Yeah, you're a P.T. Barnum of the 21st century. I really think so. You're a bright young guy that's come up with something
they'll
like this.
They'll probably make a reality show out of this that doesn't make it high-class art. I'm telling you. No offense again, Kyle, because I think you're brilliant. Do you foresee a change of career? I mean, I don't think tabletop.com is your last...
Table shot.
Whatever. I don't think it's your ultimate career goal, is it?
Well, you know, a bit of both. A little column A, column B, but there's a few opportunities that have presented themselves.
Yes,
or
they are.
Are presenting themselves. And
you're right about that. He'll be in advertising.
I like writing, so if I can keep writing, I'll be happy.
Writing and advertising. Kyle, congratulations. Good luck with it. When you get the house, we'll talk to you then.
Definitely. I look forward to it.
All right. This morning for Live Music Friday, we're joined by a Northwest supergroup of sorts. They call themselves Clever Bastards. Or is it The Clever Bastards? Which is it?
Clever Bastards.
All right, thank you. I thought it was. It's more trendy to leave the out of it, isn't it? Because then you have to go TCB.
Right.
It's just CB.
That's right.
Okay. In Clever Bastards are Heart members Roger Fisher and Mike DeRozier of legendary Heart fame. Roger Fisher's guitar lick on Barracuda is still one of the first things that every guitarist learns in guitar school.
He forgot it, though.
Yeah, did you forget it? Try it again.
Oh, I don't need to try it again.
He's got a slide on his pinky. That's why that was screwed up.
Okay.
There's a sign at Guitar Center that says no Barracuda.
I have to do that on
That's
purpose.
Right. And, of course, Mike Curley is their lead singer. They found him in Birmingham, England, is where he was born, actually. They probably found him here. Mike, welcome again.
Thank you.
Guys, I want to make sure we get both songs in, so without much further ado, let's hear it for Clever Bastards.
This is a song called Play Away. It's on the it's on the album.
Mother First.
No.
Play Away.
Play
One,
Away.
1, 2, 3.
I sent me mommy Lauren Dota just an offer out the border to Iraq. The kind of place where you get caught in a retitled conversation or headlock. Drinking coffee on the corner by the turtle, watching time going tick-tock. Ain't much else in cup of coffee, whiskey, water is the usual trip-drop. But it doesn't really matter if it's raining or it's fine, just as long as we got time to all play away. Play away, way, play away, way, away, play away, way, away, play away, way, away, play away, here we go. I have to plane across the water, saw me ma and pa, they both said, alright, son. Then I jumped into a car with all the lads and we proceeded to roll one.
Well, it is Friday.
By the time the chicken talk at 4 o'clock a.m. we all had to
do one.
But this now I'm done, I'm just a bloke who likes to smoke and maybe have some fun. Cause it doesn't really matter if it's raining or it's fine, just as long as we got time to all play away. fly away, way, fly away, way, away, fly away, way, way, fly away, way, way, fly away.
Here we saw.
Doesn't really matter if it's raining or it's fine, just as long as we got time to all play away, 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 play away.
Yeah. Happy Friday.
Clever bastard. The party is the 3rd at the Triple Door. Information on our website, bobrivers.com. Are you guys going on a national tour after this album's released?
Well, if anything out of King County is national.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
the north end to the south end.
Yeah, I'll get nosebleeds if I go too far.
Do you go back to England with this stuff?
It's back there, yeah.
Yeah.
In small amounts. Yeah. Not large amounts, but it's back there.
You're such a fun band.
It's in the Czech Republic too. We've got we're getting quite a lot of airplay in Germany, ironically.
Mongolia,
Peru.
How important is the internet these days as a way to break a band?
It's totally how we do it. You know,
iTunes.
We're iTunes. We're pretty much. There's not one specific part of the internet that is the key. It's anything you see.
Right.
We get into it, and that's
as people start to like you. They do the work that used to be done by promo people, right?
I think so. I think so.
They bribe their friends, they bring them over money, and they
yeah.
get them to... No, that's actually part of the work that used to be done by promo people. Roger.
There's actually a brand new service now where you can... how does it work? You become your own record company. It's called Burn Records.
Burn Records.
And you become your own record company, and then you set up record companies underneath you, and this thing is just starting to take off.
Sounds like a pyramid scheme, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Joe says that
Joe says that Amazon is actually burning records now. Is that right?
They're going to do DVD on demand for some of these, like, Nova series and things that, you know, they may not want to whip out 100,000 of, but people want to get to. Mm-hmm. You order it, they'll burn it and send it to your house.
That's kind of a nice way to get started. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a MySpace?
Yeah, in fact, I do, but there's nothing on it.
Though,
no, we got no friends. Oh, you always get Tom the Goose
right.
set it up.
The guy who owns yeah. MySpace.
The weirdo.
I
couldn't work out who he was at first. I was a bit worried.
What's the name of that website? Is it cleverbastards.net?
Cleverbastards.net. It's
well, who had .com? Some other clever people?
Some other clever bastards had .com.
What do they do? They take your money.
There's nothing set up.
Oh, they just own it and they squatted on it before you.
It's like I try, you know.
They're going to sell it to us for $100,000 in a few years, probably.
Nice. That's it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, another song. Tell us what this next one's about.
This was originally written for my mother, who ironically arrived again. Last time we saw you, she was here, but she arrived yesterday morning. I wrote this for my mom, and we've converted it into a dainty little number, and it's entitled Mother. And with Mother's Day coming up, we'd encourage everyone to record this tune and just play it because it's beautiful.
Yeah, and send it to your mom.
Happy Mother's Day, Mother. 1, 2, 3.
Hey! Doing it again. We're good. 1, 2, 3.
Have that one on me.
Watched you fall to pieces, not knowing what the meaning is. Looks like we've taken a fall. When the cry from the stand is, our life is backhanded, and them like us never get far. Some take it for granted, their time is a habit, and leave here not knowing for sure. But you on the other hand stood on the other stand, will always be standing there tall. And from my heart and soul comes a song for you, Mother. May it keep you warm through this year like no other.
Show me where the sun is, lifestyle and money is. Show me the document, man. I'm head up but held in, fed up not folding, just doing the best that I can. The Holy Father, now nearer, now farther, I say with no malice or jest, that if life is a plan that your master when can, may these years that remain be the best. And from my heart and soul comes a song for you, mother. May it keep you warm through this year like no other, for your heart and soul are a love song, mother, that the world will hear. 'Cause there's still a time and a place here for you.
Of a fantastic voice.
Thank you very much, Bob. So do you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Wonderful songs, guys. The CD release party at the Triple Door Wednesday. Information on that on our website, bobrivers.com. And every Friday, Live Music Friday, we put out the appeal throughout the Northwest and for touring bands worldwide who happen to be in the Northwest. Get in touch with us, because every Friday we will give somebody a couple of songs and feature to play live on the radio.
And what a noble thing to do, Bob.
It is.
Thanks
well,
so
it's
much.
Really a
it
coffee
is.
Break for us. We're too lazy to go out to the clubs.
Hours, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.